Lynn Hiles Ministries presents Dr. Lynn Hiles, That You Might Have Life. And here's your host, Dr. Lynn Hiles.
Welcome back to the program again this week. I trust you're enjoying this series that we are doing. On the set with me today is my pastor and also my younger sister, but she pastors the church that I attend when I am not traveling. And we've been talking about some things that people go through, not just people, but ministry as well. If you've been watching these, we've been talking about crises of faith. We've been talking about discouragement. People go through discouragement. We've been talking about honor, stuff like that. And we're going to continue that conversation. I would encourage you that if you know someone who's going through something like that, to share these videos with them from our YouTube channel or the podcast or the Android device. I also has an RSS feed for your Android device. And you can go to my website very easily. In the upper hand, right-hand corner, there's an icon that'll take you directly to those channels where you can watch this on demand. Go back and review that. Pause it. Think about it. Share it on a Wednesday night service. Share with your friends, and we encourage that. If you subscribe to our page there, you will be updated every time that we update or we upload a new program to those files, and we do it every week as we air them on our program. But we've been talking about a transition between Elijah and Elisha last week and how that was a picture of like old covenant, new covenant, and how Elisha had become sick of the sickness whereof he died, and he was discouraged and failed to be ministered to. It's easy sometimes to get caught up in ministry and not remember you've been ministered to. You need to be ministered to. Yeah. And what I think a common theme has been a little bit in every one of these that we've shared is that they were moving from like an old covenant, like when you see Elijah and Elisha in the River Jordan. Mm-hmm. It's a picture of John the Baptist, who Jesus said, if you could hear it, Elijah has come.
Yeah.
And if he's Elijah, then Jesus is Elisha, and they meet in the River Jordan at the location where, the manna was dropped from Elijah to Elisha. And that's what was happening in the River Jordan with John the Baptist and Jesus. It's also the place where Joshua took the children of Israel over after the death of Moses. And we're going to deal with Moses in just a moment, but one of the books I've written has a lot of that in it, and you can get it. It's called From Law to Grace, A Kingdom Paradigm Shift. And just today, our Spanish version of that book went live. Awesome. So you can go to Amazon. If you know people who speak Spanish, we have had this book, From Law to Grace, A Kingdom Paradigm Shift. I don't have one of them laying on the table here. They're probably in front of the screen there somewhere. But you can get that book now in the Spanish version, and you can get the Kindle version. It went live today, so you can be blessed to do this. So we're going to talk about Moses today and how he made the transition to kind of maybe share the load a little bit of some of the stuff that he was walking through. So it's great to have you on here, Pastor, and good to be back, and I'm going to let you take it from there. So,
yeah, so we've just been sharing, what it's like to be in ministry a lot, of it, what that is. And both of us have a heart for pastors. You pastor pastors and I pastor pastors. And, you were sharing there about even in transition, sometimes when you're in transition in ministry and you're coming from law to grace or you're bringing a people along, it can be a tricky thing, and it can be, you don't want to lose anybody. You want to bring everybody along, but not everybody's going to, hear at the same time. Not everybody's here on the same level. And I can remember, our parents' mom saying, to me, even early in ministry, when you set a table, make sure that everybody can eat it, and she raised 7 kids, so she knew how to set a table to feed the youngest or the oldest, and there's times, as a pastor that you got to get a little bread in there, you got to get a little milk in there, but you got to get a little meat in there, depending, you got to know your audience, Yeah. And so bringing them along can be a very beautiful thing, but sometimes it can be a time of transition, and we've talked a lot about transition. And so what I want to say is if you're in those times and you're feeling uncertain about things, just keep trusting that God is bringing you along. And as things begin to unfold, you see the beauty of what God is working in a people. And I always say, even when it comes to people, some people are just too hard to hold on to if they don't belong to you.
Yeah.
You know, and we can be gracious and move on from those places. But those are some of the things that sometimes I think can throw us in crisis if we don't understand what God is doing. And also, you know, we talked a lot about carrying the load yourself, you know, and learning to anoint others and to be able, we're not competition with anybody. The more I can anoint somebody else to help do what I do, the more I love it when I see them flourishing and blooming in that, you know. And I think about, you know, the story of Moses, and Moses is, God tells him, he said, go up on the mountain. And he said, lift your hands. As long as you lift your hands, then everybody in the valley is going to have victory, you know. And so Joshua's in the valley and he's doing the fight. And then Moses is on the mountain. He's got his hands raised, you know. Well, you know, you mean, I think, well, as long as you're in a, you know, we got our hands raised, we're in a posture of worship, whatever. But there's, after a little while, you get tired. And Moses starts to get tired, you know. So when his arms would start to go down, everybody in the valley starts to lose the battle. His hands go back. Well, that's a lot of pressure, you know. And we feel like that sometimes, I think, in ministry.
I'm getting worn out holding my hands up.
As long as I'm doing good, everybody's doing good. But if I go down, we're all going down, you know. And we have that weight sometimes, I think, on us. And so what God does, he sends him an Aaron and Hur, you know. And Aaron and Hur come up on the mountain with Moses so that there's somebody to hold his hands up. And we talked before about our inner circle. You know, I can't stress enough that, you know, to have those connections with people that sometimes can be our inner circle, the one you can share everything and they still love you, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, to have that inner circle of, you know, I say David was a man who fought giants, but David trained giant killers. So the men that hung out with David, you know, were giant killers too. Who your circle is, who you connect yourself with too, matters. Mm-hmm. And so he sent him in an Aaron and a Hur. And so when Aaron and Hur are up on the mount with him, they can hold the arms of Moses up. Moses is being the mediator, you know, and Joshua is in the valley. And I love that story because to me, it's a picture. When Joshua's down in the valley and he looks up, I don't think that Aaron and Hur just stood on each side and held an arm up, because now all of us are tired, right? Because you're holding your arms up. But I believe what they did was form a picture of what probably looked a lot like a mercy seat. Mm-hmm. That when Aaron leaned into Hur and Hur leaned into Aaron, you can stand a lot longer when you're leaning into something.
Yeah.
And what that was a picture of Moses being the mediator on a mercy seat in the middle of, you know, the cherubims, mm-hmm, that stood. So I believe that when Joshua looks up from the valley, what he sees is a picture of a mercy seat that's not yet come. They've not really developed, mm-hmm, the mercy seat yet. But I love the story that Hur has a son, Bezaleel, a grandson, mm-hmm, that will one day build the Ark of the Covenant. He's the man anointed, and it's the grandson of Hur. But I think that Bezaleel is able to build, but because he had a granddad who stood in the place of the mediator and modeled something, mm-hmm, to a generation that says, I saw that before it was ever built, mm-hmm, ever put in place. So then that vision is there. But God sends that and he gives us a picture, you know, of that mediator. But then Moses goes on even in the wilderness, and there's a time where it says he's judging people all day long and he's overwhelmed. And his father-in-law comes to him and said, Moses, why don't you anoint some elders, you know, to help you? You can't carry this load by yourself. And so he anoints the 70 elders and he puts them in place to begin to minister and to do the same thing that Moses was called to do, you know. And so we see the life of Moses as God brings him through Pharaoh's house. Brings him through the wilderness, you know, feeds him manna. They need manna, you got manna. You need water, you got water out of the rock. And of course, all of those are a picture of, you know, Jesus being the bread. He's the water, all of those things. But he does all of the miracles. But it comes to a point in Moses' ministry where he gets frustrated with the people and he smites the rock. And because he smites the rock, he doesn't get to go into the promised land. Which all of us in ministry are like, that don't even seem fair, right?
Yeah. That ain't a rock I'm going to hit if I'm going to miss the promised land, right?
Yeah, like, you know, and so he smites the rock. And again, you know, it's a picture that the rock is only smitten once,
yeah,
you know. And All we now have to do now is speak to the rock. And so we know that. But in the person of Moses, we see that. And it seems like Moses dies short of the promised land. You know, it seems like he dies discouraged, or it seems like he, you know, he's done all of these wonderful things. And yet there's a moment in his ministry where he seems like, you know, if I mess it up, you know. And so in that moment, and then God begins to raise up a Joshua, you know, and Joshua leads him over and all of that kind of stuff. But I think what the beauty, Dr. Howell's in that picture there is that Jesus comes over then on that Mount of Transfiguration, and who shows up with him? Moses and Elijah.
Yeah.
Both who experienced a crisis of faith.
Yeah.
Elijah says, I'm the only one, you know, I'm the only one left that's serving you. And he's in a cave, you know, hides himself in a cave with his mantle. And then Moses dies short of the promised land. But we see Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration, an example of the law and the prophets. I've come to make twain of one new man. Mm-hmm. And what I think it's a picture of, I mean, we see that it's the old and new covenant. We see that Jesus being the better mediator, Jesus being the better prophet, you know, I've come to make twain one. And when Peter gets a great idea, he said, I know what we should do. We should build a church for Elijah. We should build a church for Moses. We should build a church for Jesus. And the heaven says, no, this is my son. Hear ye him. What he's saying, there's a new voice. You know, I'm about to elevate my son. You've heard from the law. You've heard from the prophets. But now you're about to hear one new man. And I feel like in that picture, that when we see that, that God gives validation to even to both of those ministries. That I think, you know, Hebrews talks about these having all died in faith, but not yet totally receiving the promise. But yet we are so surrounded by so great a cloud of witness, that those that to us maybe seem like, you know, maybe have died discouraged or died in the faith or something like that, that God brings a validation to that even, because under the new covenant, I think probably we're our own worst critic. You know, we're the hardest on ourselves. You know, like you say, whether it was a good sermon or, you know, did the people like me? Did they not like me? You know, and if you live for the approval of the crowd or the approval of people, you're going to be disappointed. But if you live for the approval of the Father, that when he validates and said, this is my son. But I love that, you know, they didn't die, you know, that what they had carried on, what Moses, one of the greatest men of the Old Testament, Moses, his words still live.
Mm-hmm.
And the legacy that we leave behind us, whether you feel like you've been a success or a failure in your ministry right now, even wherever you are in your ministry, if you will trust that God is bringing that into a completion, you know, and he brings a fulfillment of that. And so we see that Moses, in trying to carry everything himself, just is wearing himself out. But when he begins to bring people in, you know, who knows what would have happened had Moses been on the mountain by himself. But he brings him men. You know, he brings him, again, an inner circle. He brings him those who will hold up your hands and, you know, not handle the battle by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that you always got to have someone. Sometimes it's hard to relinquish that. You know, I think sometimes even as parents, mm-hmm. we've done so much for our kids that we've not let them, you know, develop even in some areas. And we can do that as well with ministry.
Yeah.
You know, I look at a lot of things I see at times on Facebook and think, oh, Lord, you know, some of the stuff's shared and think this is a generation that really needs fathers.
Yeah.
And then I start looking back and think, well, I preached some dumb stuff too, probably when I was growing up. And thank God, you know, that.
Thank God before social media.
Before social media.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all part of a journey of developing.
It is.
So sometimes it's hard for people to step back and say, okay, well, go ahead. You know, you have to make your mistakes too. And at the same time, you know, you could certainly save yourself a lot of pain if you just listen a little bit. You know, a lot of stuff that's resurfacing right now and that I think is error is stuff I saw in the 70s and 80s, and it didn't end well then. And sometimes you think, if you just listen to me,
yeah,
I'll save you a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think honor goes two ways. We were talking about a while ago, you know, how sometimes we need, you know, to hear from people like Elisha heard from Joash the king, said, my father, he was honoring him. But I think sometimes honor goes both ways. You know, when you honor, then what's even, you know, maybe that you're, that's lower than you, if you look at it that way, I can't even say it like lower than you, but you know, if you start giving honor back and you give space.
When you serve those who serve you.
Yeah, then it kind of, you know, it kind of comes back a little bit to, it's almost like the, you reap what you sow type of thing. And so I think the encouragement of people and you know, being able to relinquish some things, even if they make mistakes, can be a difficult thing because that's the only way they learn is through the stuff that they go through. You know, sometimes you want to pick them up and say, but you know, sometimes it's in those moments that they've, you know, in my own failures. And I thought, okay, boy, I don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
And so you kind of learn some stuff through that. So it's, you know, not that God did that to you. Sometimes it was your own stupidity, but you know, the encouragement of that. I think it's so powerful though. I've heard you share that about her and his great grandson, Basileel. He saw something modeled in that that really encouraged him to be able to build the mercy seat later on because he was holding up the hands of someone, you know, was there. You know, with every Joshua, there's a Caleb. With every Moses, there's an Aaron and a Hur. There's always, you know, people that you trust and that can help you so.
Yeah, and what, you know, what we model even on how we walk through things.
Yeah.
You know, is what the next generation is learning and seeing. And like you said, we sometimes try to save them the problems when we're not doing them a favor because it's through those school of hard knocks sometimes that we, you learn, sometimes learn more through your failures than you do your successes. And, you know, I think about even, you know, we're in the ages where we've walked through crisis and sickness with our parents, you know, and some of those that kind of things. And I always say how my kids watch me serve my parents in their latter days and things like that models to them and hopefully is reciprocated in our days. Like we teach them how to walk through those situations, how to walk through a loss of a parent, how to walk through sickness, how to walk through them. And people watch you and we model that. And I believe that, you know, there are some Aarons and some Hurs and some Moseses who have stood on the mountain and really have been the reason that those in the valley have had a victory is because of how we stood, you know, how those who have stood, you know, we stand on the shoulders of those who have gone before us. And chances are, if you go down the road and see a turtle on a fence post, he didn't get there by himself,
right? He had some help to get
there. So, you know, I think we model those things to the next generation. And I'm guilty a lot of times is because I'll, you know, say, well, I just do it myself because it's just easier. Yeah, you know, I'll just save everybody else the problem. And the Lord, I felt like kind of dealt with me about that. He said, but they're not learning.
Yeah.
They're not learning how to do it themselves because you're making it easy on them instead of them stepping up and showing their expression. And so those kind of things. And so, you know, when you,
sometimes they won't step up till you step back. You know.
Or till you step out. Yeah, we think, well, who's going to do it? Who's going to be there? Well, they won't be there until there's a place to step into, you know. And then we find out, hey, they've got more in them and there's more available than what we saw, you know, or what was there. But, you know.
I was thinking while you were saying about, you know, the miracle we talked about earlier with the loaves and the fish. There was a little boy there whose mother packed him a lunch.
Right.
And you don't know what's in this next generation until there's a demand. I was thinking, you know, when I taught the message about Elijah and Elisha at our church, I talked about, can I trust you with my baby? And it was like, I was talking about Mary being a teenage girl, being entrusted with raising the Son of God.
Right.
And you talk about a heavy responsibility, but we all really are truly nurturing and, you know, and raising, if you will, the Christ that's in people, like Paul said, I travail again till Christ be formed in you. So we're all raising his baby, so to speak.
Right.
And so, but if God could trust a teenage girl with his son, I think sometimes we don't do ourselves a service nor the next generation by not letting them do some things or trusting what's inside of them. And then you see some stuff start to come out. You thought, wow, you know, this is amazing that, you know, in them. So.
Right. I preached that sermon and said, what kind of God would trust a teenager to
raise
his son? You know, we look on teenagers, but David was a teenager, Samuel was a teenager. You know, they, God called kids and called a generation, but, you know, but the willingness, and again, sometimes until the demand is there, mm-hmm. you know, and I even say to parents, you know, we've got some parents just struggling with, you know, raising kids, and you can do everything you think is right, even as a parent or even in ministry, and have kids go astray.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard. It's a crisis to deal with. And, but even Mary and Joseph lost Jesus in the temple, right? Yeah. They go 3 days and they
can't. Where's Jesus at?
I thought you had him. No, I thought you had him. You know, how do you go 3 days and not have, you know, and, of course, you know, there's significance in all of that, but, he said he was in the temple hearing and asking them questions, which was a trick of the rabbi to, you know, ask a question, you answered with a question. And so they were amazed at the intelligence of this young boy in this temple. And Mary comes back distraught. He said, well, didn't you know I'd be about my father's business? You know, and it's the understanding that, oh, he really does belong to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
He really does belong to the Lord, and our kids belong to the Lord. And, they belong to him before they ever belong to us. So
yeah.
The confidence of that, even to say, God, I trust you with my kids.
Yeah.
You know, I trust you, you know, in ministry, you know, it can be hard to have preacher's kids.
Yeah.
You know, you grow up in ministry, things like the demand is just different on them. You can say what you want. It's just different on ministry's kids. But, I think again, that goes back to those places where we say, you know, it's time for us as a family to regroup, to have time, you know, and things like that. And I think giving ourselves permission to do those things, you know, but I love it. The great man Moses, you know, he makes it in the hall of faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Elijah and them make it in the hall of faith. They didn't die as failures. They had a moment of crisis, or they had a crisis of faith. But in that, God met them and said, okay, you've had your moment. Mm-hmm. Now get up and let's move on from there. And he empowers them and gives them the direction and how to walk out of that, you know. And so what I want to say too to pastors is, if, you know, or ministry, it could be worship leaders, it can be youth teams, you know, if you are walking in a season where you feel like you're in crisis, that doesn't mean it's permanent. It's a temporary place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, listen for the still small voice. Surround yourself with the circle of people that can lift you up. Find somebody who can lift your hands and speak the word over you. But remember, it's a temporary place. And as God empowers you, even if whether it's in transition or what he's doing, sometimes he brings things to an end to bring us to the next mm-hmm. step. And I always call it between trapezes.
Mm-hmm.
There's sometimes in ministry and our life as Christians or whatever, between trapezes, you have to let go of the one you have to grab what's next.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that feeling in the middle that what if I miss this next
mm-hmm.
one,
mm-hmm.
you know? But what I'm thankful for is God's the safety net.
Yeah.
That even with if I miss it and I, you know, I don't have it all figured out, he's my safety net.
Mm-hmm.
And we just do it again and we try it again, you know? And that's the beauty of training, I think, a generation to walk along beside you. There's nothing more beautiful than to raise up young leaders and watch them step into who God has called them to be and develop their ministry, mm-hmm. you know. And even we mentioned before about church camp and things like that, the amount of pastors, worship leaders, missionaries, people taking water to countries that don't have clean water, you know, going into, you know, if I can have some small part in that, then our voices is being heard in the next generation in so many places. And that's empowering to me because it gives you the confidence to know that what you're doing matters.
Yeah.
It is changing lives. It is changing the world. You know, my mom always said, you know, in ministry, early on in ministry, she fretted over ministry, you know, and was she being successful and, you know, was she doing it right? And God just spoke to her and he said, how long did Noah preach? You know, and she responded. He said, well, how many people got in the boat? She said, well, only people got in the boat was his family. She said, well, then if you get your family in the boat, then you've done what I've called you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always remembered that because if you gauge Noah's ministry by how many people got on the boat, you wouldn't really, he didn't have a mega church either,
yeah.
you know, but his family got on board the boat. You know, and so I think you be a good steward of what God has given you and where you're at.
Yeah.
And he will bring you to the completion of what he's called you to do.
And you hear the, you know, like when you preach for a while, you hear your voice,
yeah,
or your father's voice or your mom or who the people mentored you generations later, you know. And I was thinking even while you were talking about that there's sometimes that there's just some stuff too that's veiled in mystery that you don't have an answer for. I was thinking about the thought that, you know, the history tells us that Jesus's father, his earthly father, Joseph, probably died before he was crucified. And my question is, why didn't Jesus heal his own father?
Yeah.
Why, you know, he sent down into Egypt, you know, to preserve Jesus. But what about all the mothers who lost their babies with Herod? You know, in other words, there are moments of mystery when we've lost a loved one or something. We believe God for a healing and it didn't happen. And that's the through faith stuff.
Yeah.
That you,
yeah,
just trust him anyway. And when you're feeling like, well, maybe there's questions that arise. I mean, you know, like I said, even with John the Baptist, who's going to lay his head on a chopping block in the morning, he wants to know, are you the one? Because those moments, like you go through that, are crises of faith that people face in their lives where there are unanswered questions that, you know, for me personally, when I walk through one similar to that, the Lord said to me, come bless the Lord, all you servants of the Lord who by night stand in the house of the Lord, and lift up your hands in the holy place. And if you can lift one hand without wrath and one hand without doubt,
yeah,
you can come through it. It's difficult to do that because sometimes your wrath is, you're angry at God,
mm-hmm,
and you're not sure your faith is holding with what,
right,
you know, because you're believing for healing or you're believing for a breakthrough and it doesn't happen the way you thought it would for whatever reason. I mean,
right,
sometimes I mean, there are things that I've walked through that I don't really have an answer for,
right,
it. But when I still look through it, I'd rather die in faith than I would to not have any hope and believe that God is out to bring all things together for,
yeah,
my good to them that love him and are the called according to his purpose. And so we just have to trust that he's in the middle of all of it and trust him with that. So
surely the Lord was in this place.
Surely, and I knew it not.
And I knew it. He's there.
Yeah.
We don't have to understand it all.
Yep. Well, we're out of time again. I trust you've enjoyed this week's message. Join us again next week. We're going to do one more on this subject. And tune in again next week. If you'd like to sow a seed into the ministry, we do need your help to do that. The easiest way to do it is go to the link that's on the website, lynhiles.com. And there is a place where you can give via credit card or debit card. You can become a monthly partner there by setting up a monthly debit. You can also send a check or money order to the address that will come on the screen, or you can call the number that will come on the screen and someone will take your call. God bless you. Join us again next week. I am excited to announce the release of my latest book titled The Great I Am. In this book, we will explore the seven times in the Gospel of John that Jesus says, I am. When he uses that phrase, it is always in contrast to something from the Old Covenant. For instance, they thought Moses and the law was the door into the sheepfold, but Jesus said to them, I am the door. They thought that Israel was the true vine, but Jesus said to them, I am the vine, you are the branches. As you read the pages of this book, you will discover that Jesus removed the covenant of death and replaced it with the covenant of life. Get your copy of the book, The Great I Am, today.